Garden Basics with Farmer Fred is brought to you by Smart Pots, the original lightweight, long-lasting fabric plant container. It's made in the USA. Visit smartpots.com/Fred for more information and a special discount. That's smartpots.com/Fred. Welcome to the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast. If you're just a beginning gardener or you want good gardening information, well, you've come to the right spot. You don't have to be a gardener for very long to realize the advantages of having a backyard hobby greenhouse. Besides being a warm place to overwinter your tender plants, greenhouses are great for starting your summer garden from seed in the late winter. And greenhouses are ideal for getting those plant cuttings you got from your neighbor to take root. Today we're talking greenhouse basics. It's all what you need to know before purchasing a greenhouse. Did you plant a salsa garden this year? That would be one that includes all the ingredients for a tasty salsa. Tomatoes, peppers, onions, garlic. What about cilantro? That's vital for just about any salsa recipe. And if you live in a hot summer climate, growing cilantro is best left for the cooler months because it's harvested in late winter or early spring. So what's a salsa-loving gardener to do who wants fresh, homegrown cilantro? Well, we have a quick tip on how to grow cilantro in the summer, as well as some cilantro substitutes. It's all in episode 18 of Garden Basics with Farmer Fred. And as always, we'll do it all in under 30 minutes. Let's go. If you've listened to this show long enough, you know that I've owned a greenhouse for a long time. I couldn't picture gardening without a greenhouse, especially in the springtime. Great for getting an early start on pepper seeds and tomato seeds, and then growing specialty items too in the greenhouse. If you want orchids, hey, you need a greenhouse, really. But if you've never had a greenhouse, what are some basics you should know before you plunk down your money? We're talking with Mark Seibert. He owns Sturdy Built Greenhouse up in the Portland, Oregon area. And they've been building greenhouse kits for something like 60 years. And Mark, when somebody comes in who's never owned a greenhouse, what are their usual questions?
Hey, Fred, it's certainly a real welcome thing to be speaking with you. You know, as a former Californian, I get it, living in the Sacramento area, how it can be hot sometimes and windy and such. So the first question that comes to mind is, where do I put my greenhouse? Because I've got a choice. I've got a shaded area over here. I've got full sun over there. I can put it up against my house. Is there any benefit there? So where you put your greenhouse should follow some basic guidelines. And it's almost like the Pirate's Code, right?
Right.
There's no rules.
I like to say all gardening is local, so I imagine all greenhouse placement is local too.
It is local because if you've got a large pine tree that likes to drop, you know, bombs of pine cones, or you've got, you know, kids that are throwing softballs and learning how to throw, you've got, a lawnmower that's kicking up rocks, you know, all these things are considerations, but the first consideration is sun is your friend, but too much sun is not your friend.
Well, we know that well here in Sacramento, that the people I know who own greenhouses basically abandon their greenhouse in the summertime because you can easily get up to 120, 130 degrees in there.
You know, abandoning your greenhouse is a solution, but it doesn't need to be, because a greenhouse needs to breathe. If it's well ventilated, meaning the hot air escapes and the cool air comes in, that's the first thing you can do. Other things you can do is to use shade cloth, which is attached to the outside of the greenhouse, which can lower the temperature inside your greenhouse. That's two things you can do. Beyond that, you always want to have a fan going in your greenhouse to make sure the air is being mixed up and the hot spots and the cool spots are being mixed together. The last thing you can do, if you really want to use it year-round, is you put in an evaporative cooler that'll basically act as an air conditioner in your greenhouse while adding a little bit of humidity.
I have a question about shade cloth. Is it more effective to suspend it over the roof instead of laying it on the roof?
Suspending it over your roof is perfectly fine. I find it's more effective if it's right on the roof and it's attached to the roof for this reason. If you have a wind or a gust come up, you don't want to be chasing your shade cloth down to your neighbor's house. If it's attached to the roof, we particularly prefer a solution that has grommets on the outside that are hung on pan head screws, and it's like snapping it on because it's made to fit. But you can do, you know, I have customers that'll just take large sheets of shade cloth and drape it over. I have another one that bought a structure that goes over her greenhouse that has a shade that goes automatically across. You know, that's, I mean, not necessarily for everyone and quite an expensive solution, but just simply keep it so it's attached to the greenhouse so you don't end up flying, having it fly away and having to chase your neighbors. Of course, then again, you may have wonderful neighbors and you may be able to have a nice story with them when you pick it up.
So getting back to placement of a greenhouse, which exposure is best?
You know, the basic rules, Fred, that I like is a southern exposure because that gives you full sun. You get the sunrise in the east. You get the full sun and the sunset in the west. So that way there. And it also gives you a shady side as well. So the long part of your greenhouse, if you have it southern facing, is the best of best. Is it fatal if that is not, if your greenhouse is oriented 90 degrees different, whereas the short end of your greenhouse? No, it is not. What if my location is totally shaded? What do I do? Well, you still get light in, and most of the season you will. But if you still need more light, we can thank our friends in the cannabis industry who invested in LED lighting. That lighting, which is so effective in the green and the red and the blue spectrums, it can provide great lighting to assist in the growing for anything you need if you're in a totally shaded location.
Well, that brings up another question that I bet a lot of first-time greenhouse buyers kind of forget about and have to approach it in the back end, and that's what your greenhouse needs in the way of power and water.
Great question, because the last thing you need is to having to be take buckets of water out to your greenhouse. What I like to do is I like to have a hose bib inside my greenhouse. I don't want it up against the wall. I want it on the outside of my benches because I don't like crawling under a bench to turn it on. So that's the first thing. You need water, and get it into your greenhouse, get a hose bib in there, and if you can find a solution that you don't have to have one of those Home Depot hoses that you trip over, that's a better solution for your water. And a water wand is always helpful. Going on to electricity, one of the things you're going to need in your greenhouse is a fan. You want that fan going 24/7. The best ones are wall mount oscillating fans because they mix up the air. And as we all know, when you close the door on a greenhouse, it's a stagnant air situation. Do plants grow strong if they're in stagnant air? No, of course not. Take your tomatoes. If your tomatoes grow up without any wind tension, they grow up weak. Once the fruit comes, they plop over. Not a good situation. So you have a fan, so you'll need electricity for your fan. If you have an electric heater because you want to heat your greenhouse in the winter season or fall season, you'll need electricity for that. And if you want to put a heat mat in, or if you want to start have starts, heat mats are terrific aids when you're doing starts. You'll just put that heat mat down, you put your peat pots on with your seeds in them, and that heat will just go right up into those pots, and they'll start to grow, and pretty much you're off to propagating. So heat mat, lights, fans, all that is needed for electricity. I like running it underground from your house. Same with the water. You run it underground and have to come up inside your greenhouse. That way there's no trip hazards, shock hazards, and it's all, of course, the electricity. I prefer a GCFI protected circuit.
And that goes back to the foundation of the greenhouse, because electrical and water would have to be done before a foundation can go in if you're pouring a concrete foundation. But what are some of the other foundations besides concrete that you could use for a greenhouse?
You know, the foundation that you choose is a function of two different things, the soils and the size of greenhouse. As the greenhouse gets larger, you're going to need a masonry foundation. More modest-sized greenhouses, called a 7x7, you can use a treated timber, a bed of gravel, and that treated timber and that bed of gravel is, you know, screwed together on all four corners, and I would recommend putting stakes on the inside perimeter of those treated timbers to keep, and you strap them together, and you have stakes strapped to those, and then that keeps those stakes from wiggling around. So at the wood foundation, in a bed of gravel, so there's no water, there's no soil contact or water contact on those treated timbers, and they stay dry. So that's a treated timber. Masonry foundation is always good. You want to have good footing on it. And then from there, you'll probably put a mud sill on top of that masonry foundation and allow you to screw your greenhouse or attach your greenhouse easily to that foundation. But it gets even better, Fred. Let's say you have a home with some beautiful flow finish on your walls, you know, on your home. So it's like a stone or a brick. How do you get it so that greenhouse integrates into your garden? So when someone goes into your house and they say, that belongs there, it matches, versus where did that come from? So what you do is on that foundation and base wall, which is the sturdy part of the greenhouse at the bottom, you can put, let's say, cinder block, maybe one or two courses up, and then you, on top of that, you would put a piece of wood, a treated timber, then you'd screw your greenhouse on top of that. The idea is once you have that masonry wall, you can put a faux finish, call it brick, call it stone, and have it match your home, your garden design, and so it looks like it belongs there. How's that?
You went beyond me. I'm just a gardener, but I could see where a lot of people would want that matching situation. Yes. Foundations, having built a couple of greenhouses myself, I can tell you when it comes to foundations, make it whatever you want, but make it level.
Yes, it needs to be square. You're absolutely right. You know, the old adage is if it's square and level, if you're going to be putting a door in your greenhouse that's going to be more than a zip door, that's going to be in there and it's like a standard door, you need it. It's going to go much easier if it's a level and square foundation. And it's not hard to do. There's techniques that are available to find out if it's square, and you can always use level. So just a little bit of advance work because you want that greenhouse to last you more than one or two seasons. If you do a good job on the foundation, you'll have a long-lasting greenhouse.
I'm proud to have Smart Pots as a sponsor of the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast. I like their products. I use their products. I would buy their products again. What exactly, you might be asking, is a Smart Pot? It is the original award-winning fabric planter. It's sold worldwide, and it's all made right here in the United States of America. Smart Pots come in a wide array of sizes, too. They can be reused year after year. Go to their website and check out all that they offer and get a lot more information about Smart Pots. Smart Pots are available at independent garden centers as well as select Ace and True Value stores nationwide. They're also available at Amazon.com. And I tell you what, if you visit their website, smartpots.com/Fred, you can get a nice discount if you buy those Smart Pots on Amazon. Check it out. It's smartpots.com/Fred for your discount on Smart Pots. It's the original award-winning fabric planter made right here in the USA. We're talking greenhouses with Mark Seibert of Sturdy Built Greenhouses in Portland. We were talking about greenhouse placement, about foundations, about how you can get it to match your home, things like that. But there's a lot more to greenhouses that you may not realize until after you've purchased a greenhouse and go, uh-oh, I wish I had done this or that. So, Mark, let's talk about some of those this or that. And one area that I noticed on less expensive greenhouses are the doors. And we talked about how you really need a good level foundation to hang a door correctly. But at Sturdy Built, you pre-hang those doors, don't you?
Yes, we do. We pre-hang them. We actually manufacture the doors in our shop. And we give options for the customer. Let's say a customer wants a Dutch door. Think of the old show Mr. Ed. You remember those Dutch doors where the half, you can open the top half and the bottom half stays there? That's sometimes a great solution, but again, when that top half is open, you're going to be letting flying critters in, so that's another consideration. That's why God invented screen doors, right?
Exactly. Do you have screen doors?
We don't offer screen doors, but our frame, we use standard doors, so you can put a screen door on there if you want.
Okay,
so you've got Dutch doors. You can take your door, and you can put a ventilation in your door. We have a type of window. We call it a jalousie window. Some would call it a louvered window. Other people may call it a Florida window, depending on where you grew up. But that louvered window could be in the top half of your door. So that way the door is doing double duty. So we had Dutch doors. We had doors with glass that you can open. And then thirdly, you can have either what they call a full light door. So there's glass from top to bottom. So you're getting more light in, which is a good thing. Or you can have a half light door where it's just in the top. So there's always options when you're looking at doors about how you want it to appear, even on door handles and stuff like that. So there's some answers on doors.
Well, I would hope, too, that you have a selection of wider doors, because I remember with my old greenhouse, I could fit my wheelbarrow through. On my new greenhouse, I can barely get through.
Oh, my goodness. I've seen those greenhouses where it's like a 20-inch opening and something like that, and you feel like you have to suck in your tummy when you walk in. So, yes, when you can get a, 24 inches, the minimum door we offer, but our door widths go up to 36 inches, and that 35 inches, 30 inches, and of course we can do double doors, that when you have a double door, you can open it up and have a 5-foot opening to pull just about anything in. And that gets to be, one of the things people want to use a greenhouse for is for overwintering their citrus. Let's say you have a Meyer's lemon, and you want to get it in for the wintertime so it doesn't frost over and freeze. So you want to be able to have a big enough opening so you can get your hand truck, bring it into that door. If you had a 24-inch opening, it's a little bit hard sometimes. But if you had a 30-inch or 35-inch or 36-inch opening, you're golden.
Yeah, that's a great idea for anybody with sensitive plants, that when the temperatures here in Sacramento get down to 30 degrees or 32, if you have your plants in containers, you need a place to put them. What better place than a greenhouse?
And I like that. In fact, in my own greenhouse here in Portland, what I do is I overwinter my Meyer's lemon. I put my orchid in there, and I even put my strawberries in there. And even today, my Meyer's lemon is blooming, and boy, those flowers smell wonderful.
Oh, yeah. That's the other beauty of a greenhouse, are all the aromas that are there. You brought up something earlier that I know is very vexatious to anybody who owns a greenhouse, and that's flying critters who come into the greenhouse. And in a lot of situations, it's white flies. But then I've seen situations in my own case where it's been a paper wasp nest.
Yeah. And boy, from the South, we hate the word critters. And boy, they are pesky. So what we want to do is, if we have any windows on the sidewall to let ventilation in, we want to make sure there's a screen on the outside of those. Number one. And if we have a roof vent that opens, we want screens on those. The whole point is to get it screened in. We were talking previously about having a Dutch door, and the challenge with that is you open that up and you'll get those flying critters in. So that's just the downside of having a Dutch door. But Dutch doors aren't for everybody. The point is, what you want to do is keep those flying critters out that you don't want. Some people will say, hey, don't you want the good critters in to do pollination? I think that's a great point. The challenge is, how do you do screening that only lets the good in and not the bad? I think it's very hard in my personal experience. So I'd rather just put a screening in there, keep my greenhouse as a controlled growing environment, so that whatever you're growing, you're doing it to the type of soil, type of temperature, type of humidity for your greenhouse. So, Fred, can I give you a thought on adding humidity in your greenhouse?
Sure.
Yeah, the cheapest and easiest way to add humidity in your greenhouse is to get a misting system on a timer and just spray your floor. Whatever your floor is, crushed gravel, bricks on sand, or even concrete, and let evaporation do its thing in the summer. That's how you add humidity in your greenhouse, just easy.
And not only that, it controls the temperature, too.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about walls of a greenhouse. I noticed at the Sturdy Built website, you use a lot of glass in your greenhouses instead of polycarbonate. Why is that?
Well, glass is one for, because when you're in your greenhouse, you want to be able to look out. And also, glass has the ability to, let a lot of light in. So it's got that double good there. The glass is also architectural because itself has rigidity, and it helps the structure for that. So polycarbonate is also a material that we use. As far as exterior glazing, we use the term glazing in greenhouses. You can use standard glass, which is annealed glass, 1/8 inch thick, or you can use tempered glass, which is 4 times. Now the third material we can use on the outside is a polycarbonate. That is such a great material. You look at it on the side and it looks like cardboard. That's why they call it twin wall polycarbonate. And when you do use polycarbonate, you want to make sure that you have a UV coating on the outside, because that polycarbonate and that wonderful California sun will end up eroding itself, and you'll end up getting brittle. So the idea is, you can use twin wall, but the twin wall has some other attributes you need to be aware of. Some of them are good. Number one, it's lighter than glass, so it's easier on your frame. Number two, it can take a hit. So you know, you can take twin wall, and as long as it's mounted in a good channel, you can pound on it. So if a softball hits it, not a problem. So the other attribute is its R value. Now, R value is a term we hear mostly with insulation. So you have your R19, R24 that you can see at Home Depot. It's this pink insulation and stuff. Well, the same value is used when we're talking about the glazing on a greenhouse. But let's go back to glass. Glass has a very unimpressive R value of 1. Okay, can we do better? Well, tempered glass is still glass, so it's still 1. What about that twin wall polycarbonate? That twin wall polycarbonate, depending on which, how thick it is about 50% more thermally efficient. So it has an R value of 1.5. How's that for exterior glazing?
Well, at least polycarbonate is lighter than glass.
Oh, yeah. Easier to put in, but it does have its doubles here and there.
Another thing you do with the greenhouses that you sell are the walls, the frame, it's redwood.
Oh, yes, it is. You know, we all have, there's a lot of choice in the frame of your greenhouse, and there's reasons why you would choose one or the other. Let's start with metal, then we'll go to plastic, and then we'll go to wood. We'll kind of compare and contrast. First of all, you can have a metal frame greenhouse. It's going to be the strongest greenhouse material out there. Great framing. The downside is most of the metal we use today is aluminum. Where does that aluminum come from? It comes from strip mining. I'm not personally a fan of strip mining, so I would rather not use a material for that. The next thing to know about metal is from a thermal efficiency, metal will allow heat and cool to transfer far, far more than other materials. So that's metal. The next thing you go to is plastic. Well, plastic is fine, but over time, the plastic will get brittle. And not only that, where's the plastic come from? I don't want to have dinosaurs growing anymore, so I'd rather reduce the amount of plastics I use and be more economical and more ecological. So that leaves wood. What I like about wood is that it's more thermally efficient than any other material. It looks great and can be strong enough. And when you're looking at wood, there's different species of wood, and each one has a positive and negative. You can use cedar, for example. We choose to use a California redwood, clear heart redwood, and that clear heart redwood compared to cedar is 20% stronger, has natural oils in it, and it's just drop dead gorgeous when you get that stained up, and it just looks great.
Yeah, we didn't even have time to get into lean-tos, but there's that whole phase of greenhouses as well, besides freestanding.
Yes, there is. So, you know, you may have the side of your garage. You may have the side of your home where you say that would be a great place to attach a greenhouse. You may want to use it for multiple use. It is possible to do that. Of course, it is always a horticultural space, not a living space, so it's a little bit different on the building codes, but it is possible to attach it to your home. Use your existing home siding so your home is fine, and then go out from there. But, you know, attaching your greenhouse or having it lean to you on your greenhouse, you always have to think about where it will attach to, because every greenhouse should have a roof pitch, because we want the water to go down the roof and to the ground. And that roof pitch will affect how wide your greenhouse can be. So if you've got an eave that's 8 feet and you have a roof pitch of a greenhouse, you may only be able to go out about 6 feet on your greenhouse if it has to go under that eave. If it has to go out and around your eave, that's a different story. But if you're, you know, depending on your situation, it's best to, you know, call your greenhouse manufacturers, ask them how it's going to be attached, ask them what's possible.
Good point. I want to point out something. If there is one business that truly lives by the phrase, you get what you pay for, It comes to greenhouses, and if people are greenhouse shopping, you're going to see a wide range of prices. Well, trust me, any greenhouse less than four figures is going to be a greenhouse you may soon regret right after getting it, that you need to spend a little money to get a good quality greenhouse that you're going to be happy with. And happy customers is the name of the game. I would think it's Sturdy Built.
It is the name of the game, because the greenhouses we build or should last you 20 to 30 years. How do I know that? Because we have avid gardeners who are using our greenhouse, and when their greenhouse has run its course, it's usually a greenhouse that's been 20 or 30 years old. The only other greenhouse that was younger than that that we've replaced is one that had a bad foundation. We were talking earlier about foundations. Well, that foundation went south because the customer used railroad ties. When they cut those railroad ties, they were treated on the outside, but that cut, they did not retreat. So it rotted out, bad foundation, whole greenhouse had to be replaced. But when you invest, it's like an investment because, you know, you can spend a little bit of money and be economically, you know, fine on that, but you'll end up having to respend the new dollars to replace that after it falls down. You know, we have had customers that they ended up being our customers. They come to us and they say, okay, how much is my greenhouse? Let's say a 7x9 trillion greenhouse. And they'll say, look at the price on that. And they'll say, golly gee, you know, we can do better. So they'll go to another source. They'll purchase that and they'll come back. And I've had customers come back and says, A, we were never able to finish it because the kit was incomplete. B, the kit was never delivered, or C, it fell down. So all those things happen, and I've seen it happen over and over again, that I can almost tell the customer, says, you're going to be coming back, and here's three reasons.
Yeah.
And when you do, we'll be glad to see you.
Sturdy Built is based up in the Portland area. Their website is sturdybuilt.com, and I'll spell that for you. It's Sturdi-Built, Built.com. Mark Seibert, owner of Sturdy Built Greenhouses, thanks for giving us some greenhouse basics today.
You're very welcome, Fred, and good growing for you and for your audience.
Are you trying to grow a salsa garden? It's great that most of the ingredients for salsa ripen at about the same time in the backyard garden. You've got your tomatoes, peppers, onions, garlic. And actually, if you wait until September or October to make the salsa, there might be some limes ready from your lime tree if you live in a climate where citrus can grow outdoors. But there is one ingredient that throws off that salsa recipe timing, and that's cilantro. But it depends where you live. If you live in a moderate summer climate, you might be able to grow cilantro in the summertime. But if you're in a hot summer climate, well, you can forget about it. Cilantro is going to bolt. It's going to turn bitter and send up flower stalks. But that has the advantage of attracting beneficial insects to those flowers, so there is that. In warm to hot summer climates, cilantro is a cool season crop. It's planted in the fall and harvested in late winter to early spring. That's not exactly tomato time. However, if you were listening to episode 16, you heard Renee Shepherd of Renee's Garden Seed Company offer us a tip on growing cilantro in hot climates.
Use a row cover and pick it when it's very young. The hotter it is, the younger you pick it. I have seen it grown up in the Napa Valley. I work with a grower there who actually, beside growing some seed for us, he grows very fancy greens for fancy restaurants in San Francisco. And it's very hot up there. I know it's hot where you are, too, but they get up in the early hundreds quite a bit, and that's how he's pretty successful. He actually uses the row covers and afternoon shade. He managed to get cilantro through the summer.
Renee reminds us that even though you're harvesting the cilantro at a very young age, you increase your chances of success by planting it where it gets afternoon shade. Now, there are summer growing substitutes for cilantro that you can find in just about any internet search. Mint, basil, parsley, and chives, for example. However, there are herbs that ripen in the summer that contain a more cilantro-like flavor. Most of these herbs originate in Southeast Asia, usually Vietnam, and they're available at better nurseries, or you can order the seeds. According to Rose Lovall Sale of Morning Sun Herb Farm in Vacaville, one of the best cilantro substitutes includes Vietnamese coriander, which is also called rau rum. The flavor is very similar to cilantro, with a hint of lemon and without the soapiness that's often associated with cilantro. It makes a great cilantro substitute during the summer when other cilantro species suffer and die under the hot, dry conditions. Thanks for listening to Garden Basics with Farmer Fred, brought to you by Smart Pots. Garden Basics comes out every Tuesday and Friday. It's available on many podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Google, iHeart, Stitcher, and many more. And if you're listening on Apple, please leave a comment or a rating. That helps us decide which garden topics you'd like to see addressed. And again, thank you.